Get to talk to you. Thanks ever so much for joining us tonight, Wes. When I was chatting with Dave about who we're going to be talking to over the next few months, and he just went, "Oh, you're going to be talking to Wes Morgan," and I just went very quiet. What's the matter with you? And I just went, "It's Wes Morgan." I'm all right now. I've had a word. It's all good. It's all good. So, how's life treating you? So, obviously, you've had an amazing career, and then, it's time to sort of. When did you know you needed to stop?
A good few seasons ago. You know. From the outside looking in, you probably, think, yeah, you can keep going and that, but I probably spent too much time in the medical room, probably taking up too much Leicester City resources on looking after me and things like that, which is fine. But, you get to a stage of your career where the aches don't go away after 24 hours, they linger on and they probably get worse and things like that. And my final season, didn't feature much in the team because I had a bit of a back issue that wouldn't go away, and just trying to obviously manage that and kind of get through that took its toll. And like I said, probably from a couple of seasons before I actually hung up the boots, I thought, right, there's not many more seasons I've got left in the legs. Keep going, support the team, and then you start dropping to the bench and you're just in the squad, and it's great to be a part of the team still and make sure the boys are on task and help them out wherever they need help. But at the same time, the training takes its toll, the day-to-day takes its toll. And sometimes you have to listen to your body. And when it says, right, it needs a long, long rest, that's how you know it's finished.
Good man. Well, look, I think that, you worked hard, you look at footballers and they have quite a shortened career span, really. But you played in, some amazing teams. Very quietly, I'm going to say this, Nottingham Forest. So there's that one. And then obviously there's Leicester City. So we say that louder. Jamaica as well. Yeah. Proudly for you, what's been one of the highlights or some of the highlights that you've had playing for those teams?
It's when I look back on my footballing career, it's definitely the first half of it, spending time in League One, in the Championship mostly, was obviously the toughest part. I always believed I was good enough to make the step up to the Premier League, but sometimes, if you're in a team that's not quite up to it to get promoted, or you just don't get the opportunity, another club coming in for you, you might not get a chance to showcase your skills and what you're capable of. But it got to a stage where I thought, my time at Nottingham Forest, that I've done all I can for them. I'll be looking for a new challenge, and Leicester City came calling, and the rest is history. Achieved a lot of great things with Leicester City. Premier League title, FA Cup, Champions League. List goes on, team of the year and stuff like that. It's fantastic. And my time at Leicester City obviously is the highlights, but playing for my national team as well, Jamaica, some great time, great experiences, going to places that, by myself I never would go. Meeting some fantastic people, and some highlights there, got to the final of the Gold Cup, which is a big competition that side of the water, and for our team like Jamaica to make it there and along the way beat USA in their own backyard is a big achievement for Jamaica. Yeah. So the highlights for Jamaica was that, and obviously there's many highlights for Leicester City, but Nottingham Forest, I think that probably grounded me and gave me the base to go on and achieve better things. And my time at Forest was fantastic too.
So who do you think, other than sort of yourself and your own experience and, your mental sort of strength, who do you think gave you or are there a number of people that gave you the sort of the leg up or the lift up or giving you the tutorship that you need when you were at Forest to sort of make it, as it were, when you were at Leicester City?
I'll say it's probably before my Forest days, before my professional playing days.
Okay.
I had rejection when I was a youth player at Notts County. Didn't get
how
a contract.
How dare they?
And then played semi-pro football. I was 15, 16, playing in the men's team. And I think the physicality definitely helped me make the step up to first team professional football when I eventually got there. I was playing for my college team and the coach there gave me the first real opportunity to try and get back into the elite of football by getting me trials at Nottingham Forest, which was fantastic. And, I always mention him because I think that was one of the things that if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I am today. There's people, a school teacher, an English school teacher that helped me a lot. Because I think, the area I'm from and the way, we are kind of brought up where the areas we're from, teacher would take, not pity, but, look after us and probably take special time to make sure we, had a good chance. And he used to drop me and my friends home after school and after training, because his son used to play in the same team, little things like that, I think, goes a long, long way. And they're the people that I remember most that definitely helped me on where I am today.
So, I mean, you've won a couple of things with Leicester City. And you got to it was the final with the Gold Cup with Jamaica, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What for you, what's been some of those? So, and amongst you've won the Premiership, you've won the FA Cup. You've been playing over in Europe as well. You got to the final with the Gold Cup with Jamaica. What are some of the highlights for you out of your playing career?
Obviously, lifting the Premier League trophy. I think during the Nottingham Forest days, I didn't even know I was even going to get a chance to play in the Premier League. So, you put it into context. To play, actually get into the Premier League, was a big, big highlight. But to win it, I never thought that would be possible. So, that's definitely clear beyond anything else. Champions League, I'm normally sitting with my friends on a Tuesday evening, watching that, getting a bit of food, having a couple of beers and enjoying the Champions League. So to actually playing that, is a big, big highlight for me. Scoring as well in the Champions League, massive, little things like scoring at Old Trafford, which proved to be a vital goal, because that point we got on that game, was enough to eventually win us the title, the Premier League title, because of the results in the end. So just little things like that stand out for me. And obviously meeting some great people at Leicester along the way, the owners, special people, have a close connection with them. Hope I ain't missed anybody out, but yeah, there's some good highlights.
It's always difficult because you're trying to list all the good things. You're like, I know I haven't. And yeah. Anybody else? So talk to me about what's so special about Leicester City Football Club. Talk to me about the team. Talk to me about the managers that you played under.
Yeah, obviously it's a bit of a controversial move going from Nottingham Forest to Leicester, and I didn't realise that at the time, because Forest fans hate Derby. Obviously, when I went to Leicester, one of my first interviews was, how do you think the Leicester City supporters will take to you? And I was like, I didn't know how to answer that because I wasn't too sure. I knew it was, very close proximity, but I didn't know they looked at us as a bit of a rival. And I understand that. But obviously I answered that question. I think Nigel Pearson, definitely, he when out before I went to Leicester, Nigel Pearson, gave me a call and I didn't know much about him, but he sounded great on the phone. And then obviously when I went there and worked under him, got really close connection with Nigel. And I think what he tried to build was definitely the foundation of where we are today. Mm-hmm. So great, credit to him. I think just the way the club's run, what makes it so special, you know, the owners, how they are. I'm not sure it's the same in any other team. You know, you speak to probably other players, they'll never see the owners, where our owners at Leicester City, they'll always come down to the changing rooms before the game, have a laugh, try and give you some encouragement, try and incentivize the game or the result. Little things like that. You know, for me, when we won the league, you know, he got me on a flight. He said, "Where do you want to go?" Sent me to his house in Phuket. Little things like that, you know, they'll do anything for you, you know. And I think the fans felt that as well. You know, the little times when it's his birthday or it's a special occasion, he'll make sure the fans maybe get a pie and a beer. Little things like that, which makes the club unique, I think, and very, very special. And you don't see that at many other clubs.
I agree. I don't, you know, for me, and I'm an avid sort of, you know, football fan, and Leicester City is obviously my team. But anybody that I talk to or spoken to, and I've done, you know, a lot of these conversations. Thank you, Dave, for allowing me to do this. Is you know, I don't see that connection, and I'd happily be proven wrong, but I don't see that connection from the owners to the fans, to the team. And from what I can see, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, it's not just the first team that they're connecting with as well. It's right through all the way down to the academy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's clear to see. Yeah, I think obviously when Vijay died, support from all of the teams, you know, the Leicester City in general, the players, I think you could see the emotion and how much it hurt everyone involved in football, which was fantastic to see, you know. And the stuff he's done for the hospitals, local hospitals, little things like obviously taking care of the fans. Obviously, stuff he does for the players, and there's lots and lots of stuff they do for the players. And all they ask for return is, we just want you to win, try your hardest, try and win games. That makes us the most happiest. And yeah, you know, the investment they put into the city and the club is amazing. And the new training ground, you know, for all the youngsters is unbelievable. If you've not seen it, it's
a bit special.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and their aim was to create one of the best facilities in Europe, you know, and it is amazing. It really is. And that's the dedication they've put into, you know, Leicester, the city, the club and the players. You know, they just want to do good, and it makes them happy if we're happy.
Who's been the best manager that you've played under, do you think? Or managers? I'll give you a get out of jail card on that one.
I think Brendan's really good. You know, I've had plenty of managers. I've had loads of managers, and sometimes they're not all quite, you know, quite there. I can say that now I've retired. but I think the most kind of normal, I'd say, is definitely Brendan. You know, I think one of his strengths is management, and that's what a lot of managers deal with. You know, you got 24 players and only 11 can play. It's difficult to keep everybody happy. And I think one of Brendan's many strengths is, you know, he'll look after the whole squad, and he can talk to you on a normal level. And I think that's well received amongst the players and recognised. And yeah, Nigel I had a special connection with as well, Nigel Pearson.
But I think you're right. If you go back to what you were saying before, is that when Nigel brought you in, if you look at sort of the management and the foundation of the team ethos, I believe, and you've taken on board what you say is that came from Nigel.
Yeah.
And still continues today, even though there's been, you know, different managers that have come through, and you've now got, you know, Brendan's there now, but you take it back to Nigel, and the core of the squad is still kind of in and around that.
Yeah, you know, I think when the owners took over, you know, obviously invest a lot of money into the team. They had Sven as the manager. I think they just tried to buy, you know, probably the best players in the championship. And or, you know, the bottom half of the Premier League, you know, the top, top players that are available. And sometimes it's not about, you know, just getting the names and it will work. Mm-hmm. It's about getting, obviously, good quality players, but the right type of people. And
yeah.
I think Nigel was very, very big on that. You know, he wasn't looking for players that was, you know, yeah, he's a fantastic player, but he could be a problem. You know, he's going to upset the dressing room. You know, that wouldn't be a Nigel type of player. He'll pick players. He'll do his research. He'll speak to people that will know that player. Find out if he's the right fit. You know, he had a great team around him to help him get that type of information. And that was the type of players he would bring in, you know, and then created something fantastic. It was only took, what, 2.5 seasons when after I joined Leicester that we got promoted to the Premier League.
Oh, I think that was all you, though. It got nothing to do with Nigel.
You know what? We had Vards came at the same time as well, so I can't take all the credit.
Oh, don't give it to him. He always gets the plaudits.
Yeah, Vards came in, you know, Danny Drinkwater, Matty James. A lot of players came in around about that time and add that to what was kind of already there. And, you know, Nigel would have moved some players around and probably got rid of some and brought some upwards. He created something fantastic there. And the bond amongst that group of players was unbelievable. You know, we used to do things at least once a month, you know, even if it's a bit of bowling, you know, a bit of food, going out for a drink. You know, we used to do quite a lot together. And I think that goes a long, long way when it comes to playing a match on the pitch.
Talking of drink, talk to me about Captain Morgan.
What do you want to know?
Did they approach you? Did you? How did that come about, that sort of working relationship?
I suppose from both ends, it's pretty straightforward, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously with the success I had in the league, you know, they got hold of me and was keen to do something. And yeah, I'd done an advert with them and obviously a few social media campaign type things and obviously special edition drinks. And yeah, you know, got a few.
How many crates of have you got stored away in the garage?
Yeah, you know, running very low. I have to have a look in there, but yeah, you know, they don't just do Captain Morgan, they do a range of alcohol. So yeah, I got well stocked up, let's say that.
Good man. Well done. Well done. So talk to me about, Dave touched on this earlier on, and where you've done a lot with regards to, for us at Koi Sports and behind the scenes, and not everybody gets to hear or see about it. Giving back when you can and how you can, why do you do that, do you think?
I think, yeah, I just think there's a lot of underprivileged people out there that definitely need help. You know, people don't get chances, people don't get opportunities. I've seen it on the ground level, you know, and, you know, for me, I've always wanted to try and help people. You ask any of my family and friends, and they'll probably say I'm too generous, you know. It might be a fault, it might not be, but you know, I think if you're in a privileged position, you got to try and do something. So, you know, a lot of things that I'm involved in, you probably have no idea as well, but a lot of things that I'm involved in with the trying to make changes in the game and quality and diversity, you know, I do lots of stuff with the Premier League. I'm on the board of the PFA, do things with the Leicester City in that area also, you know, a lot of things that I feel probably I can definitely help and improve on and use my influence to make better changes. And, you know, I think that drives me.
Do you think that, and we'll touch on equality and diversity and inclusion. Do you think that it's better today than it was a few years ago?
I think it's
in some areas.
It's different, isn't it? I think it's just a lot different where it's still there, but it's like in a different way. You know, I think obviously with the social media, everyone knows. So it's a bit of a breeding ground for keyboard warriors to voice negative opinions. That's the biggest problem that is the most difficult to tackle, definitely. And it was there before, but you wouldn't hear about it as much because of the lack of social media or the lack of engagement in social media.
Yeah.
But such a big platform now, and everyone can see what everyone's saying on there. So, you know, people who are ignorant people, I'll say, can say or voice their opinions with not much consequences. So this is what, you know, one of the things people like me and a lot of people in my type of area that I work in some departments, trying to make these social media companies accountable for their actions. And
yeah,
it's difficult because, you know, they have their agenda, but, you know, we're still trying and we're finding ways.
And I was reading, and I know the PFA are trying to do a lot with regards to this. And I suppose, and you touched on this, is the keyboard warrior, which is, you know, have a Twitter account, you know, Adam with loads of digits afterwards, obviously a made up one. And then they're slating you because you've had a bad game or whatever else. Yeah. I suppose to somebody who's been in the game a while, you kind of create a thick skin and just leave it to one side. To the youngsters that are coming through, and if you look at some of the players that played the other day, for us, you know, they're sort of 17, 18, 19 years old. They haven't really been in the limelight and they haven't got that thick skin yet. How do you as somebody that's been in the game a while and is you know, is looked up at as somebody that's, you know, that can provide that assistance, how are you talking to these young individuals about, don't listen to them, don't listen to all that noise over there, just concentrate on your game, concentrate and focus on you? How are you helping those?
I think it's a very, very good point. You know, my generation, you know, I'm all too old, you know, I grew up without the social media limelight. And, you know, the abuse, if you got any, was coming from the stands. So it's easy to ignore it, let your feet do the talking. And that's what you was kind of taught to do. Today's generation, the younger players, you know, they come through in this social media era where, you know, they're scrutinized constantly and they probably can't help but look and read and take it in, you know, and I probably don't even know the answer how to help individuals with tackling that type of, you know,
negativity. Do the clubs help the younger players out with regards to that?
It's help there. It depends if they ask for help, you know. Obviously, really? I joined the call when I think the topic was mental health and that. And that's a big, big thing.
Yeah.
You know, and some people bottle it up. Some people talk about it. And we encourage players to bring it up. You know, you'll have support from the clubs. There's support there or there's support at the PFA. And they're the options for you. And it's hard to tell someone, oh, ignore that talk because it's difficult. You know, if I said something to you, you might be able to ignore it, but it still resonates. So it's a difficult one, but that's the, you know, the generation that it is now. And all we can do is offer support.
I mean, quite rightly, you touched on mental health, which is what I was coming to. So I think that, please do correct me if I'm wrong, is during your playing career, you have such a regimented sort of lifestyle.
Yeah,
you know, get up, breakfast, training, medical, whatever else, more eating, weight room, whatever else.
Yeah.
So when you finish, is that hard?
I think it's hard for probably 80-90% of the players. You know, they probably, sometimes football finishes with you before you're ready to finish with football. I'm in a position where I was ready. I've done a lot of work beforehand. I had a lot of things in motion. I had a lot of things set up for me to make that next step into that. And it's a lot different. But for me, I'm happier in a sense where, you know, I don't have to get up on a rainy, snowy day and think, right, I'm going to have to train for 2 hours in this and it's going to be a hard session. You know, I used to drive and thinking, I'm too old for this now. You know, so that's when you know you're ready. But yeah, you know, I think a lot of players and a majority of players do struggle with that. And I think, when you're in a team, or your friends are around you, you're constantly around lads, you got that banter, you got that connection, and as soon as you're out of that, you know, you lose that, you know, and it's difficult for a lot of players.
Who was the biggest joker in the team?
I'd probably say Vards, you know. I felt just Vards.
How did I think that was going to come up?
Yeah, because he's a bit nuts anyway, you know. And
I used to two cans of Red Bull he has before every game. It can't be good for him.
So wired up. You just see him in the changing rooms. Like, he's probably four cans of Red Bull down. And he's wired. I see, just calm down and save it for the match because you're going to burn out already, you know. But in the game, we still keep going, you know. And yeah, he lives on Red Bull. You don't, like, you know, breakfast, you'll have, I don't know, scrambled eggs, bit of toast, bit of bacon, or whatever it is. And I'm like, how's he keep going, you know, because he's just running constantly. And he just gets wired up, Red Bull. He's got headphones in. He's listening to some hardcore dance music, yeah. So he's ready for a fight. He's ready for a fight by the time he gets out to the pitch. And that's why you see him, like, so animated sometimes.
Oh, bless him. Hardest worker on the pitch or off the pitch?
I think at the recent team, I think Yuri Tillemans, he probably works too hard. You know, he's constantly, we've got so many sports scientists, you know, fitness people in the club that are there to support. And there's a lot of things you have to do. And there's a lot of things that are optional, you know, and Yuri's the type of guy who will take all the optional things. You know, he's always in the ice chamber. I used to hate the ice chamber, but after training, he's in the ice chamber, he's in the cold baths, in the hot baths, he's in the pool, he's doing gym. And I was like, he's doing too much gym. I even mentioned it to some of the fitness guys, like, he's doing too much work. He needs to calm down. He said, yeah, I know, but, you know, he wants to improve. And I think that's why, definitely this season, he's definitely the standout performer for Leicester.
He's been
he works so hard.
Yeah.
And when you're coming from a different league, I think the physicality, the speed of the Premier League is different compared to any other leagues. You have to adapt your game and, you know, get up to speed pretty quickly. And fair to say, you know, when he first came, he probably wasn't quite there very good, but not the 100% finished article. But I think this season he's shown that, you know, all his hard work has paid off.
So we talked a little bit about sort of the work that you do within sort of charities and stuff like that. And you played in Soccer Aid recently. How was that?
It was really good. It wasn't what I expected, you know. When I finished the season,
what were you expecting then? What do you think? What did you at the time? What were you expecting before you actually went?
I thought it was going to be, you know, because there's the training camp beforehand, so there's like a 4-day training camp and then the match. So I've gone to obviously the training camp thinking, right, it's going to be some serious kind of training. You know, I had my boots. I was down to the training field on time. I didn't see no one for like 45 minutes. I was like, I said, what's going on? So I'm there just getting a massage, getting limbered up and warmed up. And then all this kind of celebrity kind of guys start coming down, social media cameras, you've got flip-flops on, they've not even got kit on. Then they're getting dragged away to do interviews. Then we all had to leave the training field. Then there's a big entrance from, I think, Kem, from Love Island, where he came on a monster truck and jumped out of the car and started saying some stuff. So very quickly, I found out it was more of a show rather than football. Yeah. And I've gone in there thinking, you know, I'm going to a training camp. It's going to be some serious training. It wasn't. It was, It was more of a show. We did a bit of training, you know, and it's more for the benefit of the celeb guys, you know, just getting them used to organisation on the football field and things like that. But it was a great experience, you know. I really liked it. I didn't know what to expect, like I said. But, you know, each one of them nights, we was having a bit of food and then there's, you know, there's wine on the table and beers and there was some late nights. There's some great artists there, you know, and they're getting the guitar out. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. They had the guitar out, doing like a private music session for us. It was really special, to be fair. But I didn't know what to expect. But yeah, it was a fantastic experience.
And then obviously you played.
And then played, yeah. The night before, I don't know how anyone got through that game because it was a big night. And I'm a fan of brandy. I'm a fan of rum. And me and little Sean Wright Phillips probably got through about, you know, and there's a couple of other guys as well, you know, a couple bottles of brandy. So I woke up on the day of the game thinking, I don't have to get, so I had to get to the sauna. Well, let me have a little swim, get myself, like, you know, ready, you know, and obviously play the training, the game, you know, the second half I played.
So do you think you'll be doing it again?
Yeah, you know, There's a group chat, actually, with all the guys in there, and always throwing things in there, you know, and some, there's Lee Mack in there, there's some funny characters in there. And already talking about next year and what could happen, will be this year, shall I say. Yeah. What would happen. So, yeah, I'll get the call up. I'll go, definitely.
Just for the crack, and then maybe play over the odd minute or two when you...
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like I said, you meet some great people. Like, for example, I'm a big fan of Line of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin, who's the right back.
Martin Compton, yeah.
BCI Arnold, his name is in there. Yeah, you know, to play with him. And he was buzzing. I'm buzzing to see him, but he was buzzing to see me, you know, because he's a big football fan as well.
He's a decent player, though, isn't he?
You know, he's great.
He's a half-decent player.
Yeah, he was all right. He's got, obviously, Scottish, so he had that little bit of aggression, which is great for football, you know, and he was getting stuck in, giving 100%.
Yeah, he is decent. So, other than making great mates with Martin and maybe, you know, will they bring Line of Duty back? And so you'll be the first person we talk to on that.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else that you're still sort of talking to and maybe doing something with?
Yeah, you know, obviously met, you know, a few guys, you know, a couple of the, you know, social media guys, you know, being on social media with loads of followers and, you know, touch base with them a few things. And probably Sean Wright Phillips, you know, was talking, and there's a program that me and him both like, which is called The Hunted. I don't know if you watch, it's like a Channel 4, where they go on a run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do like a celebrity version. It was like, oh, me, you should do that. So... You never know, it might happen, to be fair.
That's got to happen now. You heard it first here.
Yeah, that's an exclusive.
Right, we'll put that out on social media. Just try and push it over the line and make it happen. So what's I've got some questions from the rest of the people. Let me find them. It's not all about me asking you loads of questions. Naki has said thank you to Wes for the signed jersey for their Deeder office in Uganda. So thank you very much, Wes. Dave Johnson has just asked, so what was Ranieri, and in capital letters, really like but be successful?
I think for me, you know, I think I always had the... I think my base is, you know, I'm a really good defender, you know. I'm strong. I think I'm quick enough and aggressive enough and, you know, can battle and can defend defensive awareness. I think the step up is probably working together as a unit and just being, instead of reactive, proactive. You know, that's the difference between probably the Premier League and the lower leagues, and definitely in my championship days, you know, I'll definitely be reactive where the ball would go and then I'll attack it. But the striker might have a head start because, you know, I'm reacting where, you know, you learn from your mistakes, the longer you play, the wiser you get, and definitely proactive where you can read the game much, much better, see the danger before it happens. And that added to probably the raw ability I had, made me a much better player.
Good. Thank you. Peter's asked, if the Jamaica FA had a bigger budget or a better budget, how many more international games do you think you could have played for them?
I didn't start to quite late, to be fair, on the Jamaica scene. You know, I did kind of hold out for as long as possible with the England thing. And it probably would have came up, to be fair, but I wasn't in the Premier League at the time, so I was in the Championship. I thought, all right, I want to play international football. Jamaica's... you know, been there. I've kind of said, I want to wait. And I knew it was time to, you know, make a decision because I wasn't getting any younger. And I don't regret my decision, to be fair. But I probably, you know, there's a lot of politics going on with Jamaica. So whoever asked that question might have an idea, but there's a lot of politics with Jamaica and the budget's not the best and the way that it's organised isn't the best either. So I'll probably finish, you know, at a good time, like even to probably last season. If I wanted to continue play or wanted to come back, they probably would have took me back. But it takes its toll, you know. I used to enjoy the international break and having a rest rather than you know, play a game on a Saturday, on Sunday you're on a flight to Jamaica, you're connecting flights for America just to, you know, play out there, play a couple of games, and then come back and then train a couple of times, you're back into a match. And yeah, when I was younger, that used to be easy. You know, the time when we won the Premier League, the season before, I played all the games, or practically all the games. Went away for Jamaica straight away after the season finished. Played in two competitions. Got to the final of the Gold Cup. Came back, trained twice, and then the season's restarted. So there's a lot of football, and probably that's why my back was so so terrible in the end, you know, because it caught with me. But yeah, at the time, you feel fine. You're playing game after game after game, and it's football, it's normal.
Yeah. Like you say, it is going to take the toll on you, especially when you've had so many games and then you've gone straight in to do that. Mm. So, yeah. Interesting question come from Vanessa. What do you make of the PFA's refusal to publish its internal report?
It's not the first time I've been asked this question, to be fair.
Good question, though.
It's I find it quite interesting, to be fair. And there's an operational board, you know, and the players' board. There's certain things that we have input on, and there's some things we don't kind of have input on. And it's kind of like, right, this is the decision that's been made, and you know, you kind of go with it. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's probably something we could go into a lot deeper, to be fair. But yeah, all I can say is probably I don't necessarily agree with that, but it is what it is. Can't change it, no.
So there's a big game that's going to happen soon. Nottingham Forest versus Leicester. You know, are you going is one question. And also, that's going to be a tough one. Who are you going to support?
Well, I've been asked this question quite a lot, as you can imagine. It depends who I'm talking to. yeah, I'll definitely be at the game. You know, it's a big game. I'll probably be working at the game actually. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I try and go down to the Forest ground at least a couple of times a season anyway. And obviously we don't get to play Forest and Leicester and get to play often, and or you know, not often at all, shall I say. So this is going to be really interesting. You know, obviously, I think my allegiances lie with Leicester. You know, my Forest days are, you know, was before Leicester, and all my glory's been at Leicester. But I'll be there. I'll be supporting kind of Leicester. But, you know, the Forest fans receive me quite well still, you know, so I don't want to upset nobody.
You touched on this a little bit. You said you're going to be working. So what, you know, now you've hung the boots up and you said that you were preparing anyway and putting sort of things in place. What are you doing now and what are you going to be doing in the future? You know, just to occupy your time, that kind of thing.
Like I said, you know, I'll do stuff for the Premier League and the PFA anyway, stuff for Leicester City. But I'll do some TV stuff as well. They're always trying to get me on, and it's not something that I, you know, wholeheartedly want to go fully into. But I'll just dip my toe in now and again, depending on how I feel. I'm going to be probably requested to do some stuff for the Forest Leicester game, I'd imagine, yeah.
Is coaching something that you want to go into, do you think?
Not like, you know, a priority. You know, I'm literally in the middle of doing my UEFA B badge with some of the Leicester boys at the moment. But it's nothing that, right, I want to be a coach. It's something that, you know, imagine Casper is the manager and he said, Wes, come on, let's just give it a go. You can be one of my coaches or my assistant. And I'd be like, you know what, I'll give it a try, you know. But
yeah,
if it falls or the opportunity is there, I've got my badges to take it up if I wanted to. But, you know, from the inside looking in and seeing what the coaches do and the hours they put in and how, you know, when I look at a manager's managerial position and how the turnover is, you know, I want to be settled. And I take Brendan, for example. He's gone from Liverpool up to Scotland, Celtic, back down to, well, before Liverpool, he's in Wales, Swansea, then Liverpool, Celtic, then back down to Leicester, you know, and I just want to be settled more than anything. So No, it's not something I reckon I've got a lot to offer, you know, and probably something more for the youth team and the kids where, you know, you're working in that kind of setup, but, you know, first team, probably not, but who knows?
Okay. Well, and that may well be that you'll be developing, you know, those amazing players of the future, obviously for Leicester, you know, that's where we'll go. For me, it's been an absolute honour and a privilege to have a chat with you. I could carry on chatting with you all night. I'm not allowed to. Dave says I'm not allowed to. It was one of the things he did say to me. You've only got 45 minutes, John, so just make sure it's in and around that and don't be chatting all night. So I think from me to you, thank you so much. It's been a privilege. It really has. I'd love to be able to chat with you again at some point, and I'd love to be able to make that happen. So thank you very much.
Pleasure.
There's like a million other questions that are knocking around, but I'm sure we'll get to them at some point. Maybe we'll do another one of these in the near future.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Appreciate it, mate. All the best.
Nice one. See you later, guys.
Cheers, Wes. Tell them. There we go. Well done, Mr. Woodcock.
Right. I'm all fangirled out now.
Well done, mate.
Thank you.
We're actually writing to the PFA right now about their refusal to publish this internal report, and part of it is around safeguarding the well-being, including mental health, of players and ex-players, which has been largely completely ignored.
I don't know, we touched on it slightly and I didn't really want to delve into it too much because I think...
I regretted asking it after I asked it.
I think it was a really important question because I think that there is an awful lot. I could have disappeared down a rabbit hole with that, to be fair. And I think that it's such an important subject, and the fact that they haven't produced their internal report, for me personally, is quite damning.
Very damning. Very damning. It stinks.
So it'd be interesting to see what kind of response you get to that, to be fair, Vanessa.
Mm. Well, my client was, who is an ex-Premier, well, I've got a bunch of them, they're ex-Premier League and England players. They were asked to call off the dogs. So that was just after I wrote two letters to the PFA, Top Guns, before Christmas. So I've been called a lot worse things. But when I've got some gossip for you, I'll share it.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. But no, I really thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, great.
Can't thank you enough, Dave, for allowing me to do that.
Absolute pleasure. Do you want to have a little see who we're speaking to next month?
Yeah, go on then.
Hang on. Got to share my screen again.
Well, technical proficiency going out there, then. Oh, yes. Oh,
Simon Torfell, international cricket umpire, won 5 consecutive ICC Umpire of the Year awards. 74 tests umpired, 174 one-day internationals, 34 T20 internationals.
And the one thing when we were chatting the other day about this, it's just the first time that we've done or has spoken about or done anything with cricket.
Really weird. Really weird.
In nearly 3 years, is it?
Yeah. Well, he's getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to come and talk to you lovely lot for nothing.
For well, he can drink coffee and we'll be on beers.
Absolutely. But that should be a really, really good one.
It'll be a good one, but...
Yeah, hey, nice one, Dave. That one's really stumped me, but I think I'm going to have to bail on it.
Richie Weston in the house.
See ya.
Are you going to go back into that room on your own again?
Instead of saying see ya, you should have said I've got to bail.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's on a sticky wicket, I tell you.
See you, man. Very good, very good. So with that, that's the level of interviewing we can expect next month, is it?
Yeah, you might want to give it to somebody else. No, I'll be fine.
Listen, guys, thank you so much for giving the time up to come and join us this evening. I really appreciate it. Thanks to members, thanks to guests. Hang on for an after hours.
I'll stick around for a little bit.
you don't have to, please don't feel you have to. But yeah, 2022 is going to be brilliant. I won't let it be anything other than brilliant. And internally, we've got a lot of changes coming, which can only push us on. And again, thank you very much for being members and everything you do for grassroots sports. Do your membership fee and other things. You know, Steve Walker's here tonight. Is Steve still here?
He's just typed something, yeah.
There you are, Steve.
Okay, there he is.
Yeah, Steve deserves a mention. Steve, well, deserves a few mentions, actually. Put together a kit collection for George over in Kenya and also for Latoya as well. Believe it or not, I've had some criticism for that happen. Hands up. It's Steve that took his own initiative to do that. And that isn't about shifting any blame, because there is no blame to shift. You need to be recognised for that, Steve. The work you've done in pulling that together to support George is amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's just that cost of getting it over there, you know.
Why is it so much? I know that I've asked, I'm sure I've asked this before, and I can't remember what the answer is. Why is it so much to get it all shifted?
I don't know. I went on the... no one knows this, but me and George had to pay extra money out of our own pocket because UHL, I went through a website that got the cost down so much, but then when it got over to Kenya, it got to Kenya within 2 days, believe it or not. It was just incredible. And then UPS, sorry, in Kenya refused to pass it on because until we had to pay tax. So George,
was that proper tax or was that back pocket tax?
Well, who knows? We had to pay VAT tax, £65. So I just paid that because I wanted him to have the stuff. Mm. And then UPS then got in touch with the company and said that it was too heavy. The boxes were big, even, and I had to prove that they weren't. So then and this went on for about a week, 2 weeks, and then George just paid the extra sort of £65 to then release it from there. So in total, then two boxes that went over there, probably about £400.
Steve, next lot you send out, give me a shout, because I might be able to do something with air freight.
Yeah, well... You know, I've got some numbers. I think Naki's given me some numbers for Latoya's stuff. Georgie's got a box of boots ready to go out and some socks. But to me, the Latoya's stuff is really important because the actual sort of weatherproof coats for the street kids so they're not getting cold at night. And then also a box of footballs. So he can just get them out into the community so the community can start coming together through football and the sort of workshops that he does. And then obviously the third box for him is actual sportswear kit and everything like that. So, you know, there is links. I'll put the link on again after the meeting, but there is links, however small. Thank you very much, James, for your donation. Really appreciate it. Any size donation for that just giving page would be much appreciated.
So. I've Stephen, we need to meet up anyway because I've still got those 5 bags of kit.
Exactly. Yeah. And we can start moving those around the organisations as well. But yeah. I do know that the two boxes, you know, I look at them as a small gesture. But I do know, I don't know if he's still on here, but I do know this has changed what George is doing. You know, he can actually then move the great work he's doing into some more zones. It's so important to support these great, great organisations, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think, Stephen, this leads on to what we're trying to do in 2022, which is to cover those core costs. Because what you're doing there is allowing it to happen. That support has to be there, you know, help George and extend what he does and other people that we support. No, but as new members come in, we want to do more of being able to release funds to help that, pay for the rent on the offices, which is what we do obviously for Naki and George at the moment. Stuff that you're doing, mate, you know, core operational costs is one thing, but you know, it's important to have an office if you can't, if you've got a kit or you haven't got any balls to pick about, you know, amazing, man. Really, really.
So there's four boxes to sort of go out that's sort of all ready, and that's without say without the great support of James. James has got like a garage full of stuff, but like I say, I think the first one was always going to be a learning curve. Unfortunately, involves money, but it's, you know, it's that now that learning curve's, you know, sort of learns. You know, we just got to try and get away for it, but yeah, it wasn't a very good experience, to be honest with you. But you know, they've got them now, and that's seeing the smiles on their faces, and they had a tournament. I'd sent them like a little medal over. Because I'm saying it sounds daft, but we don't know how lucky we are. It was just one medal left over from my lad's presentation evening, so I just put it in the box because there was a little bit of room. But they held a tournament, and whoever won it actually got that that medal. And our lads on a Sunday, everyone got one each, but you know, you got an organisation playing, and whoever won it won that. Do you know what I mean? It's amazing when you actually see the changes and the stuff that you can do, to be fair.
Well, George has increased numbers from 200 to 600 in a year. So yeah, the extra resource is very much needed, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the difference he's making to those people is huge.
Just little things when you see them playing games and training and stuff in the bare feet, flip-flops, and, you know, I go to, I run a football team under 16. Can you hear the mums going, oh, that's the second pair of boots he's had this season? And you just think, you know, we are in a such a really privileged, you know, it is hard, you know, life at the moment, but we still are very in a privileged situation compared to other people.
100%.
But
100%.
Everyone just needs to keep on this. You know, the 12 people left just need to keep on doing what they're doing within this organisation, because it does make a difference to people.
Well, I'll just do what I'm really good at, which is talking.
Yeah.
That's kind of my skill set.
That's your superpower. We've all got them.
I was going to say, that's just my skill set. I'm shit at everything else. I can just talk.
I bet you can drink a bit.
Yeah, every now and again. Can't hold it, but yeah. I can drink.
Brilliant.
But no, it's all good.
Just to let you know as well, because we'll be, you know, John and I do a radio show thing. It's not really core sports, not really Val, it's not really anything other than us having a chat with people. We switched the format round to panel show, which is the first one. We're pre-recording this Thursday throughout Monday. We want to be able to utilise that to promote you guys as well. So moving forward, we'll be doing the fortnightly. If anybody wants to be part of that, it will just be a chat, but a debate chat. I'm very keen to push forward the promotion of our members through different mediums, and that being one of them. So if anybody's interested in doing that, just drop me a line, WhatsApp or email or something. Because we're looking at four guests per show. It's just a great opportunity to have a chat and at the same time promote your businesses whilst we're promoting corporate social responsibility and positive social change. It's a nice little mix. So, you know, I'd love for some of you folks to be on there. I really, really would. And it's an hour and a half out of the time. We podcast it as well, so you can use it as a bit of material. Put out there.
The key thing with the podcast stuff as well is that once Dave pushes that out, you can then keep that link, and you'll be able to push it out on your marketing as well, to sort of market you out and what you do and how you do it. So it's a free bit of marketing for you and what you do as well.
Brilliant,
very
good idea.
Because you deserve plaudits for doing what we do through this. Collective we.
Absolutely.
Right.
Super. I'd just say that was probably, I've had the best chat tonight. Really have. Not just with you lot. You're